In chapter 26, we'll be covering the high-yield bone pathology. I'd like you to turn to hereditary bone disorders. The first disease we'll talk about is achondroplasia. I love this one because it's the most common cause of dwarfism. And anytime you've seen one of those Hollywood movies where you see the little people, the dwarfs running around, they all have one form or another of achondroplasia. In fact, if you remember Fantasy Island, Tattoo, the guy was always saying, da plane. He had a form of achondroplasia. Now, what causes it? Well, it's a hereditary disorder. It's an autosomal dominant disorder, and there's a mutation in a fibroblast growth factor receptor number 3. Now, the problem with this mutation is it activates this factor. The activation of this factor is going to inhibit cartilage formation. And remember, when you're forming your long bones, you form it from a cartilage plate. So if you knock out the cartilage production, the growth plates will fuse, and your long bones never grow. So that's why they're dwarfs. All their long bones will be short. Otherwise, they're pretty normal. The head is relatively normal. The trunk is relatively normal. They've got a normal lifespan, normal fertility. Okay, let's move on to the second disease, osteogenesis imperfecta. The other name for this is brittle bone disease. You should remember the hereditary defect is in the synthesis or the production of collagen type 1. Now, in the pathology, without type 1, you have very poor bone formation, and you wind up having a generalized osteopenia. In fact, your bones are very thin and they're very brittle. These patients have numerous, thousands and thousands of bone fractures. The other thing that's characteristic about these patients is if you look in their eyes, their sclera is really thin. So a lot of these patients, the sclera won't be white, it'll actually look blue. In fact, when you hear about blue sclera, the diagnosis is osteogenesis imperfecta. Next part of the body that's affected is the joints. Again, they're formed with a lot of collagen type 1. So they tend to have very lax, hyperflexible joints. Finally, the bones of the inner ear are commonly affected, and many of these kids wind up being deaf. Also remember that when the teeth form, there's also a lot of collagen in there. So these people can have awful teeth. They call that dentinogenesis imperfecta, where they wind up with these small, fragile, discolored teeth. Finally, I'd like you to take a look at table number 26.1, and it shows some of the clinical phenotypes of osteogenesis imperfecta. I want you just to pay attention for a second and look at type 2. This is the most severe form. These kids, their bones are so fragile that at the time of birth, when they're being forced through the birth canal, they get thousands of fractures, and they get basically born dead. They're just a pile of crumpled bones. So type 2, remember, as being the most severe form. Okay, let's move on from brittle bone disease to marble bone disease and talk about osteopetrosis. Your bones are becoming like marble. Okay, the hereditary defect in this case is decreased osteoclast function. Remember the role of the osteoclast. Its job is to resorb bone. Without the resorption of bones, the bones just keep getting thicker and thicker and thicker until they become as thick as marble. Now, you would think, wow, thick bones, they got to be really strong. That's not the case. They're thick and brittle because you don't have ongoing remodeling of the bone. So again, these patients are going to have a lot of fractures. Okay, if we turn the page, notice that the thickened bones fracture easily. They become thick, the marrow gets narrowed. When the marrow gets narrowed, you have what's called a myelofistic process. The way I remember that is if here's the marrow, here's the fist. A myelofistic process is a process that pushes your bone marrow out of the bones. Where does it go? Well, you wind up having extramedullary hematopoiesis. It goes to the liver and the spleen. Those organs get large. The next thing I want you to remember about this disease is as the bones get bigger, remember in the brain, when the cranial nerves leave the skull, they've got to go through foramen. As the bones get thicker, the foramen gets narrower and narrower. So they tend to develop cranial nerve impingement and palsies. Okay, let's look at some of the x-ray findings. On x-ray, they tend to have symmetrical generalized osteosclerosis. All their bones are thick. And one final characteristic feature, some of the long bones, the metaphysis tends to be flared outward. In fact, they describe it as looking like an Erlenmeyer flask deformity, because it flares outward like one of those laboratory test tubes. Okay, let's talk about the two major clinical forms. There's the malignant type, known as the autosomal recessive type. This affects infants and kids. They develop a tremendous amount of fractures. And since the bone marrow gets pushed out, they get anemia, thrombocytopenia, and recurrent infections. The less severe type is called the autosomal dominant type. Usually affects adults. They get fractures. They get a little bit of anemia. They get some cranial nerve impingement. Okay, let's move to Paget's disease. This is a five-star topic for the board. Board loves Paget's. By definition, it's a localized disorder of bone remodeling. The bone does not remodel well. Let's look at the epidemiology. The patient on the exam is always going to be older than 40, because that's when this disease starts. And commonly, they will be of European ancestry. Let's look at the etiology. We're not sure exactly what causes it, but we think it's due to paramyxal virus, a slow virus, in patients who are genetically susceptible. Let's look at the forms of involvement. There's two types, monoastonic and polyastonic. Monoastonic means only one bone is involved. Polyastonic means more than one bone. Now, on the exam, what's the most common bones that are involved? On the exam, they love to give you enlargement of the skull. But also remember, the pelvis can be enlarged, the humerus, the tibia as well. Let's talk about the three stages of Paget's disease. Initially, when it first starts out, it starts out as an osteolytic process. The bone becomes lysed. The next stage is a mixed stage. You have osteolysis and osteoid production. They call it a mixed osteolytic osteoblastic phase. This is the phase where most patients present. And they're going to come in with fractures, because you're not having the normal turnover of bone. The bone is weak. They come in with fractures, and then the next thing you'll notice on laboratory exam, they'll have an elevation in alkaline phosphatase. That's a great sign that bone is turning over. The final phase is the burnout stage. It's known as the osteosclerotic phase. Basically, the bone becomes very thickened. Let's look at some of the pathology. I'd like you to triple star the microscopic. The board loves this one. Whenever you look at the bone in somebody who's got Paget's, the normal bone should be lamellar bone, meaning that all the cement lines should line up uniformly. In Paget's disease, this is a haphazard disease. The cement lines are now, they call them a mosaic pattern because they're all haphazard. They're in every direction. Okay? Very characteristic if you see a photograph of it. Okay. Last thing I want you to remember about pathology is that these involved bones are very brittle. They tend to fracture very commonly. Okay, let's talk about some of the clinical features. The skull, when it's involved, the skull will actually get bigger. And on the exam, they've given you an older male who comes into the office. He says, "Doctor, my hat no longer fits. I have to keep getting a bigger and bigger hat." That's a great clue to Paget's disease. Another thing that can happen when the head is involved, if the foramen become thicker and thicker, you can get cranial nerve palsies. And finally, when the bones of the face become involved, they develop what's called a lion-like face. It's very characteristic. Let's look at some other clinical features. Many cases are totally asymptomatic. Some patients will have just bone pain. Other patients can have actual deformity to the bone. They can have fractures. And one last thing that they have is the involved bone tends to be very warm, because in the medullary cavity, you form lots of AV fistulas. So all the blood flow makes that area very warm. Let's look at some of the lab findings. Again, in the mixed phase, they tend to come in with elevations in serum alk phos. They also have increased levels of urinary hydroxyproline from the breakdown of all the collagen. Let's look at the complications. All the AV shunts that you form in the bone marrow can actually lead to high output cardiac failure. Another big complication is an osteogenic sarcoma. It's one of the causes of a secondary osteogenic sarcoma. Okay, let's move on to osteoporosis. very common in the United States. This is a disease where you have normal bones, you just have a decrease in the amount of bone. Otherwise, the bone is normal. It's just not enough bone. It's one of the most common bone disorders in the United States. It's rampant. It's like an epidemic. It mostly occurs in postmenopausal Caucasian females, especially when they become very elderly. Let's look at the pathogenesis. There's primary causes and there are secondary causes. For the primary causes, estrogen deficiency is a big one. Without estrogen, you can't form strong bones. What else? Genetic factors. Like African Americans tend to be spared from this disease because they have higher bone density. It's just genetic. Other factors, here's a big one, lack of exercise. In fact, what do you put a patient on who has osteoporosis? You tell them, go and do weight-bearing exercise. It's one of the big causes is being a couch potato, not moving at all. Some of the secondary causes, patients who become immobilized, say your arm gets casted, your bones will start to reabsorb. What else? Endocrinopathies, like thyrotoxicosis, too much thyroid hormone, that's a hypermetabolic state, your bones break down. What else? Corticosteroid use, that also leads to osteoporosis. And finally, genetic diseases like Gaucher's. Let's talk about some of the clinical features. Many patients are asymptomatic. Some patients can have vague bone pain, but classically on the exam, they'll present with fractures. And usually they're pathologic fractures. Like they'll give you an example of a woman. She's leaning against a surface, either a desk or a wall, and suddenly she hears a snap in her arm. That shouldn't happen normally, right? You should be able to bear weight with your hand without it breaking. Or they can give you somebody who plays sports. They haven't played sports in a long time. They suddenly go out. They go to hit a baseball, and just the swinging motion alone fractures the bone. It's a great clue for osteoporosis, pathologic fractures. Okay, what types of fractures do they get in specific? Well, a big one, they tend to get vertebral compression fractures. In fact, if you ever looked at older patients, they tend to shrink as they get older because their vertebrae are collapsing due to osteoporosis. What else? They tend to develop hip fractures. The last fracture they get is if they fall over and they try to land on their hand, they develop a fracture of the distal bones, the radius and the ulna. We call that a Colles fracture. Those are all characteristic of osteoporosis. How do you make the diagnosis? Well, on x-ray, the bones will look very osteopenic. Also, you can do what's called a dual energy x-ray absorptometry. That's words a mouthful. I like the term DEXA. It's much easier. That measures the density of bones. Let's go to the laboratory. All the laboratory findings are completely normal. Microscopically, if you took a biopsy, you would see thin cortical bone and thin bone trabeculae. How do you treat these patients? Estrogen replacement. That's the big one. You can give them calcitonin. And finally, you tell them to do weight-bearing exercise. Okay, let's move on to osteomalacia versus rickets. I like to remember this one as being softening of bones. These patients have very soft bones because the bones do not become mineralized. There's a defect in vitamin D. If it occurs in children, we call it rickets. If it occurs in adults, we call it osteomalacia. Let's look at some of the etiologies. Dietary deficiency of vitamin D. Intestinal malabsorption of vitamin D. Lack of sunlight. And finally, renal and liver disease, all are causes. For children, their bones are growing. So when they have a vitamin D deficiency, they tend to develop bone deformities. For instance, in your handout, take a look at this. You develop skeletal deformities such as craniotabes or frontal bossing. They develop a rachitic rosary. Basically, that's the overgrowth of cartilage along the sternum. Finally, their sternum tends to be very protuberant. We call that pectus carinatum, pigeon breast. And finally, their legs, since they're weight-bearing on these soft bones, the tibia and the femur tends to bow. Very characteristic in these kids, bowed legs. For adults, they've already grown to their height, so skeletal deformities are not such a big problem. What is a big problem is they have bone pain and they tend to have lots of fractures. Now, if you look at the laboratory, One of the big ways you'll be able to tell osteomalacia from osteoporosis is the laboratories. In osteomalacia, they have low serum calcium and phosphorus and a high alkaline phosphatase. Remember, osteoporosis had no laboratory abnormalities. Let's go on and talk about some of the bone tumors. We'll start with the benign bone tumors. The first one they can ask you about is called an osteoma. It's a benign bone tumor that usually occurs in the face, in the skull, the maxilla, or the mandible. Those are the most common sites. They tend to be associated with Gardner's. Remember, that's a familial polyposis syndrome. So remember Gardner's and osteomas. The next one in your handout is an osteoid osteoma. For this one, they love to give you a history of somebody who's got a painful bone growth. It's usually on the diaphysis, the long portion of long bones. The other characteristic feature is it occurs in young males, usually in their teenage years. And this is characteristic. It's painful, but the pain is worse at night, and it's relieved by aspirin. Very characteristic for osteoid osteomas. On x-ray, the tumor has a central area of radiolucency surrounded by a sclerotic rim. Next in your handout is called an osteoblastoma. These are very similar to osteoid osteomas. They're just larger. They're usually greater than 2 centimeters. Let's go on to an exostosis, also known as an osteochondroma. These are benign bony growths that usually occur at the metaphysis. They're bony proliferations that are capped with cartilage. So anytime you have a bone growth capped with cartilage, think of an osteochondroma. They tend to occur in adolescent males. They tend to be firm, and they're usually at the end of long bones. So for instance, one might occur right here. You get a protuberance of this area. Okay, let's move on to enchondromas. These are benign collagenous malignancies. They're tumors of cartilage. They usually occur within the bone, within the medullary cavity. What's interesting about them is they tend to occur in the hands and feet. They call them enchondromatosis syndromes. Boy, is that a mouthful. The two big ones you should know about is Allier's and Marfucci's. For Allier's, you got multiple tumors throughout the hands. And the other thing that they have, in addition to these, is they develop chondrosarcomas. So Allier's, remember, a chondrosarcoma. For Marfucci's, again, they get multiple of these tumors. They also develop hemangiomas. And the last thing is they have an increased risk of developing other neoplasms. For instance, they can develop ovarian cancer and brain gliomas very commonly. All right, let's move into malignant bone tumors. These malignant tumors are a board favorite. I'd focus on these a lot more than I would the benign tumors. The biggest of all is osteogenic sarcoma, also known as osteosarcoma. It's the most common of all primary bone tumors. The incidence, it tends to occur in males, especially male teenagers. It's much more common in patients who have familial retinoblastoma. The clinical features, you tend to have localized bone pain and swelling over the affected area. The classical x-ray findings you should know for each of these bone tumors. For this tumor, it's usually the Codman's triangle, or what we call a sunburst or starburst appearance. Basically, you have radiating lines that are coming out of the tumor, so it looks like a sun. Last one is this tumor tends to be very destructive, so it destroys all the surrounding bone. Let's talk about the gross appearance. First of all, for each bone tumor, they have a characteristic location of the bone they like to affect. For osteogenic sarcoma, it's almost always in the metaphysis of long bones, usually around the knee. So the distal femur or proximal tibia are the most common sites. Under the microscope, this tumor tends to be pretty anaplastic. The tumor cells vary in size and shape, but they produce osteoid and bone. That's how you'll identify it's an osteogenic sarcoma. Let's look at the treatment. The treatment is surgical resection followed by chemotherapy. Prognosis, incredibly poor. Because remember how I told you sarcomas spread? Sarcomas tend to spread hematogenously. And this tumor in particular tends to go through the veins and wind up in the lungs. Okay, last thing I want you to remember is secondary osteosarcomas. They tend to occur in elderly patients. They tend to be associated with Paget's disease, bone irradiation, and finally chronic osteomyelitis. And the problem with secondary osteogenic sarcomas is they are incredibly aggressive, highly malignant. They don't respond to the therapy at all. Okay, let's move on to chondrosarcoma. It's not commonly tested. It's a malignant tumor of chondroblast. It occurs in males in their middle ages. It usually involves the shoulder and pelvic girdle. It's the most common location. On microscopy, you're going to see malignant chondroblasts and chondroid production. Let's move on to giant cell tumor of bone, also known as an osteoclastoma. This tumor affects women more commonly than men. It typically presents as a bulky mass or as a bone fracture. On X-ray, the classic appearance is it tends to have a sclerotic capsule around it. Sort of looks like bubbles. They sometimes say it has a soap bubble type of appearance. On microscopy, you might imagine that a giant cell tumor will have giant cells. And sure enough, this one does. All the giant cells are scattered within a background of stromal cells. They're mononuclear stromal cells. Okay, let's move on to Ewing sarcoma. Oh, actually, before I do that, one last thing I want to tell you about giant cell tumor of bone is which part of the bone is most commonly affected. Remember, osteogenic sarcoma was the metaphysis. This one affects the epiphysis, the end of the bone. The next one we're going to talk about is Ewing's. That affects the diaphysis, or the long aspect of the bone. So let's talk about Ewing's. Okay, this is a highly aggressive tumor. Tends to affect males more commonly than females, usually in the teenage years. Clinically, they tend to have bone pain and swelling and tenderness over the tumor. The genetics are big for this exam. You gotta know the classic translocation. It's translocation 1122. Let's talk about the X-ray appearance of Ewing's. This tends to have an onion skin appearance, because this tumor invades through the periosteum. As it invades up through the cortex of the bone, you form layers of periosteum, one on top of the other. So it looks like the concentric rings of an onion. So they call it onion skinning. Okay, the gross appearance. It affects the diaphysis, usually of the femur or the pelvis. Microscopically, this is a tumor of undifferentiated cells. So the cells look small, they're round, they're blue. From time to time, the cells can actually form these structures, these rounded structures. They call them Homer Wright rosettes. On the exam, if you hear the term Homer Wright rosettes, the diagnosis is Ewing's. Nothing else makes those. Treatment is a combination of chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation. Prognosis is pretty good. 5-year survival, about 75%. Final thing for this chapter is metastasis. Many tumors will metastasize to bone. On the exam, they're quite fond of asking about prostate cancer. Remember, prostate cancer loves to go to the lower vertebrae. When it does, it tends to be osteoblastic. Most other tumors are osteolytic. And what else goes there? Breast loves to go there, lung cancer, kidney cancer, and so forth. That brings us to the end of chapter 26, bone pathology.